You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
While you were skipping stones, building forts, and flying kites, I was missing school and all my Saturday nights. Other kids were climbing trees and rolling down hills. I was singing songs to pay my family's bills. Little me, growing up Broadway. Little me.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Little Me with me, Mark Tuminelli. My guest today has been appearing on Broadway since the age of 10. His Broadway credits include SpongeBob SquarePants, Tuck Everlasting, Gypsy, Big, Les Miserables, and the Will Rogers Follies. Off-Broadway, he's appeared in The Visitor, Baghdaddy, Substitution, Tea and Sympathy, Captain's Courageous, and many others. His regional credits include View from the Bridge at the Goodman, West Side Story at Stratford Shakespeare Festival, and Neil LaBute's My America 2, Middle of the Night at Baltimore Center Stage. His film and TV credits include Mr. Richardson, FBI, The Mysteries of Laura, The Following, The Leftovers, The Carrie Diaries, It Could Be Worse, and I Love You, But I Lied, and the upcoming Better Nate Than Ever on Disney Plus. Please welcome my buddy, Brandon Espinoza. Hi, Brandon.
Hey.
I said to Brandon before we started, I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but I'm going to make you do it for 45 minutes. So thank you for being here. How are things?
I think we're all on the same page here. It's been wild, but
the world overall, is on fire. Yeah.
Essentially, that's kind of what it is.
Yes. I'm going to jump in because you have lived my 90s Broadway kid dream doing Les Mis and doing Big and doing Will Rogers. Like, these were the shows that I was very obsessed with in my formative preteen years.
Yeah.
So I want to know what you were doing at 8 and 9 in Queens in your living room that made your mom be like, this kid is a star. What was happening pre Will Rogers?
So I started dancing when I was 3. And growing up, I grew up in Ozone Park in Queens, there weren't a lot of dance studios around there. And especially the ones that were there were no boys. And some studios didn't take boys at that time. It was kind of surreal. I didn't know any of this. But the reason why they took me into dance school, because I had a lot of energy and I would always kind of move around. They play music and they're like, maybe he wants to dance a little bit. We'll just throw him in and see. And I kind of fell in love with it instantly. Like, I was taking tap class, like jazz, you name it, kind of doing that. And I went from there to, I got to a place when I was 8 years old. I was learning pretty fast. And the teachers at the dance studio, George Connolly Dance Studio in Queens. And some of the teachers were like, he's learning fast. And I think the best way for him to grow is to go into the city and take class. So I started doing Broadway Dance Center. There's like a children's program. Like every Saturday it was an intensive. And like, I remember in my class, Jason Samuels in my class, who was like a crazy tap hoofer, he's in Bringing Noise, Bringing Funk, like all that stuff. So it was like all this crazy, like young talent. So I would do that every week. And then from there, I went to an open call for a Kids R Us commercial. They wanted kids who could dance. I was 9. I didn't know what I was doing. It was like an open call. And essentially they taught us choreography and it was like a cattle call. So there's a bunch of people, kids in there. And I ended up getting it, like my first audition, I ended up booking it. And from there I got an agent. And it kind of just kept happening like that. And when I was a kid, I didn't really know necessarily what I wanted to do. I just would do something and be like, well, that was fun. And I would just keep going. I didn't know anything about Broadway at the time. And how that happened, and you can stop me if I am.
No, I'm loving this. So yeah. So then, if you didn't even know about Broadway, how did that? Then Will Rogers, like, did an agent get you that audition? What happened?
So the dance studio that I was in Queens, one of the dance teachers became a casting associate, and she was a casting associate for Will Rogers Follies, and she always would go to, because obviously she knew a lot of kids who danced and they needed kids who could dance, but also who could sing. And I never sang before. So before I even had my first audition for Rogers Follies, I was 9 and she called my parents like, can he come in? They want a kid who can dance, who can sing. And I said, and I kept saying no, because I was so scared. I've never sang. I was terrified at the thought of standing in front of people and singing. I was like, not for me.
No,
I don't want to
do it.
No,
thank you.
No. And my parents are so like anti-stage parents. They're just kind of, which I love, which was actually helped me, kept me grounded. But so I kept saying no because I was just terrified. And then my dad, he goes, listen, he goes, Miss Barbara, that's in Barbara Cavagna, who's now, oh God, I think she lives in Florida now. I don't remember. But anyway, she was like, listen, Miss Barbara really wants you to come in. Just come in and just sing a little something. You don't have to do a whole song, just a little. So the only song I knew, like, you know, a song was like, Getting to Know You, because I did a dance to like that. I was like, I know that. He's like, okay, just go in. You know what? Just, and then she'll, and that was the thing. They're like, she'll never bother you again. You go in, you know, they did not expect me to get it also. Cause
yeah,
there's so many
kids.
Of
course not. Yeah.
So, and at this time, cause this doesn't happen anymore. I mean, it does, but it's very rare. Your audition was on the stage of the Palace Theater.
Wow.
I did my audition facing this huge theater. I was 10 years old. I didn't know anything about theater. Nothing. I didn't know a Broadway show. I didn't know a musical, if you named it. I knew Cats because I saw the commercial all the time. It used to scare me.
That commercial used to be on 24 hours a day.
All the time.
Like, always.
And I remember as a kid, I couldn't process. I was like, wait, grown people dressed as cats dance? Like, I couldn't. I remember being a kid being like, what is that?
I think as an adult, we still have a hard time processing what that
yes,
was.
Yes, I did okay, see it. Great. We can get into that off this. But yeah, so anyway, so I get there and it's, once again, it's like a catacomb. Every kid you can imagine and with their parents and they're like warming up and doing whatever. And like, it was really, I was like, what is happening right now? And an hour goes by and they're taking like 10, 15 kids at a time to go up to the stage audition. Then they're making cuts. And it was a long time before I got seen, and I got to a point where I was like, Dad, I just want to go home. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. This is too long. And my dad pulls me in the bathroom. He goes, like, come here. Don't tell your mother. I'll give you $20 if you stay for this audition. And I go, deal. And so I stayed, and it happened. Like, I go on stage. I had, and this is something that comes back later. I had, remember LA Lights? I don't know if you remember those. LA
oh my
Lights,
God, the yes. The sneakers that lit up. They were so cool.
Yeah. So I had those on.
Part of the LA gear collection.
Yeah, mind you, like there were some kids in like sweats, like prepared to dance. I was in like jeans, sneakers. I didn't know what was happening. So I go and I do the audition. They're making cuts and I'm still there. And my dad, because what they did was they keep the kids who they didn't cut, they keep them on the stage. So my dad and my mom kept seeing kids coming down as like time was passing. He was like, he's still there. Like they did not think, they thought I'd get cut immediately. And they're like, okay, he's still there. More people come. And then I remember it gets down to, I see me and one other kid. First they're like, can you sing? So I sang a song. I'm pretty sure it's Getting to Know You. I have to talk with my parents. I was so I was terrified. I was shaking. They start playing. I don't even know how much I sang. I can't even remember what it looked like, how it sounded or whatever. And when I was done, I was like, oh God, it's over. It's like, thank God. Then they taught the other kid more choreography. The stage manager gets up. He comes to me. I didn't know he's the stage manager at the time. He puts his arm around me and he's like, I just want to let you know, those LA Lights got you the job. And I was like, so.
So what? Am I like, in the play?
I didn't know. So I go downstairs and I remember someone being like, going to parents, I was like, I think I got it. And then they came out, like, it was just one of those things I just found out there that I booked it. And I still wasn't super excited because I didn't really understand. I was kind of like, I got this thing. This will be fun. I also didn't process that theater that would be filled with people. I just was kind of like, yeah, this is fun. And then I remember, there's one thing I remember. We were in the subway. My mom, at the time, no real cell phone. So it was like a payphone. And my mom has the thickest Brooklyn accent ever. She's born and raised. She's like, yeah, he booked Broadway. I don't know. He booked it. And I was like, okay.
He booked Broadway.
He booked Broadway, you know, he booked it. And I don't even think she said books, you know, book. He's like, he got Broadway. And I was like, okay. So that's how that happened. And it kind of, from there, it moved so fast. I think I started rehearsal pretty much immediately, but this was crazy. My first day of rehearsal, supposed to wake up, I had a fever. I was sick as a dog. I had a fever, cough, cold, all you name it. I had everything. I woke up that morning for my first day of rehearsal and they were trying to see if I can get out of it, but I had to go. And I was learning stuff just like 102 fever. Like, I was
sick
just
as
like
hell.
Sick as a duck.
We're not allowed to do that anymore.
I know. Well, that's what I mean. But no, we're not, definitely not. But at the time, it was like, just come in and I was like, so I downed Tylenol and did whatever and did it. But it was, it just happened so fast. It was like costume fitting. All this stuff just kept kind of going on. And it didn't really hit me until my first performance. What we do is the kids, it's Will Rogers' kids, they come out of this trunk and they introduce themselves one at a time. And then they do this number. And
howdy, I'm James Rogers. I'm familiar.
I'm James Rogers, yeah. So I, not feeling super nervous, like all the kids around me, like, how you feel? And I was like, yeah, this is going to be fun. Like,
were you the only replacement coming in? Like all the kids were the same kids?
All the kids were the same. It was just me. So I remember coming out like one at a time. I was the middle kid. So like, Roger, like, oh, this is crazy. Like, I'm doing this. I remember coming out, looking out and seeing all those people. And I swear to you, my heart, I was like, I've never been so nervous in my life. I was terrified because I was like, as if I was going to be like, who invited these people? I was terrified.
Like the Palace Theater, three levels of like, you know, 1,800 seats. Yeah, it was still a hot ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I was terrified. But what took me out of that immediately, and then I just focused on what I was supposed to do, was I had these chaps on, and they didn't fit properly, so they kept falling down. So my whole focus was on pulling these up as I was doing the rest of the number. So like, I quickly like was no longer nervous. I was just like, let me get through this. Gosh, let me get this. And then the rest was kind of a blur. But ever since then, I will say, like, I say it all the time. It was like the first time when I heard like that audience applause, I was like, oh man, this is different. And then I just like fell in love with it, but also like getting to watch the adults, like what they did, I just became fascinated. Like I would always be downstairs like watching people like going back and forth and watching their performances. I just was hooked from then on. But it was something that I didn't know until that happened.
How did your parents react to sort of seeing you on Broadway, which is like a very different thing than doing the dance recital or doing a commercial? Just sort of, This is like a very big moment where you can look around and be like, are you all seeing my kid? You know?
Yeah, it's funny. We never really talked at length about it, but I know for them, it was just shock. It was shock for them because also they were like, how is he doing this right now? Like we'd never in a million years expected us to be in this audience watching him on Broadway. It's surreal. So I think for them, it was just really surreal. And they loved it because they always, what's funny is they did go to Broadway shows before they had us. They obviously didn't really get to experience that when we were growing up, but yeah. And they always loved musicals. I just didn't really know about it until I got that. And they were like, this is wild. Like to think that he's, you know,
did they send you to the show? Like once you were cast, did you like sit in the audience and watch the show like a few times? So you had a sense of like, oh, I'm doing that. Like that must've felt kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, it was, I think it was 2 days later or a day later. They gave us a ticket with my folks and we sat in the audience and we watched the show for the first time.
And that was your first Broadway show that you ever saw?
First show I saw was Roger Bell. Yeah. But then I was hooked. Like I said, I remember seeing that and loving it, but not really knowing if I wanted to do it, obviously, until I got on stage and I was like, okay, I want to do this. But I did see another show right after that called Five Guys Named Mo.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you what happened in that show. All I know is I had the best time. I was 10. I was like, this is amazing. I don't know what Broadway is, but I'm loving every second of it.
How long did you stay in the show before Les Mis came calling?
So that happened. I did the last about 6 months of the run. So then that.
So it was like Mickey Rooney in the show then?
Yes. And he couldn't remember anything.
Oh, yeah. That is like, those are very famous stories of him not knowing what was going on at Will Rogers' place.
And I will say, this is the thing too about him. Like Larry Gatlin, who was playing Will Rogers at the time, remarkable. Like, the way he handled Mickey Rooney on stage was incredible. It was one of those things where a lot of us would just stop because, like, what's he going to say this time? Because you didn't know what was going to come out of Mickey Rooney's mouth. You had no idea. There was times where he would go to sing and he'd go, bah, boo, da, boop. He would just say, and you're like, what is happening? You don't know what's happening. But Larry was so good with him. I remember even being a kid being like, that's incredible. Cause it was improv essentially. He was like, I gotta go with this. And Larry Gatlin is by no stretch. He's not some like professional like actor. He's a country singer who just stepped into this role and he was remarkable the way he handled it. And Mickey Rooney was great. Don't get me wrong. And he was so sweet. He just you know, he was older. He didn't know what was happening.
I remember, this might be an insane, weird memory I have of seeing Mickey Rooney outside the theater because your curtains were like later and he would get people to buy tickets at the for those last couple months. He would stand outside the theater and be like, come inside and see Will Rogers Folly is. We started 8:30 or something like that. Am I crazy?
You know, no, because this is what we did. And I don't know any shows that do this now. Obviously, it's a different time, but we were week to week. So a lot of us castmates would go out to TKTS and we'd stand there, we'd do a little something, we'd try and get people like hand out flyers, try to get them to see the show so we could stay open another week. So it was week to week to a point where like Sunday we're rolling around, we're like, this might be our last show. And they take the notice down. We're like, okay, we got another week. And we do it was like that.
Oh my God.
So and I, you know, we were like, kids, get out there and do it. I was like, okay, like, all right. And
I mean, that's like kind of old school showbiz, which I'm like a little bit obsessed with. It's like that's real life gypsy. Yeah.
It was like you wait till that notice comes down and then it came down. You're like, okay, we're good. We got another week. So it was a week to week. It was a bit of a struggle, but then obviously we closed. It was a few months later that I got an audition for Les Mis.
Now, was that something that was like kind of on your radar or your agents were like, we'll get you into Les Mis next? Like it just felt like a natural thing.
I guess so. I didn't really know. I'm sure that was what my agent was thinking at the time, which is because I did have an audition. I remember that's what it was. I think I had an audition towards the end of Rogers Follies for Les Mis. And my mom gave me, because I didn't know it, and it was the London cast. So I started singing it with an accent. And I remember, I think I had my audition and they were like, he doesn't need to do an accent. I just, something like that. And I was like, oh.
You like him, mate. Look easy, pickings, but he's got
I'm
like,
serious. I was British. Learning it with a dialect and I didn't know. And I think what happened was they asked if I was interested in going on tour. I don't know if they offered it to me or what. I think they did because my parents at the time were contemplating it, being like, how will we make this work? And it got to the point where my parents were like, we don't want to separate the family. We want you to stay here. We don't want you to go on the road. And I thought that was fine. I had no desire to leave anyway. Yeah. But the Broadway, how I got Broadway was months later, came back in, and I had to do my audition for Richard J. Alexander. And for who was casting it at the time? I don't even remember.
Johnson Liff, right?
That's what it was. Yep.
Yeah.
And so I went in, I sang. I sang Look Down, that little section.
Yeah.
And Richard J is looking at me. He's like, okay. He's like, he's like, have you seen the show? And I was like, no. He goes, what? He's like, who's out there? I go, my dad. He's like, bring your dad in here right now. And I was like, Dad, someone wants to see you. I was like, what? He comes in, Richard J is like, so why haven't you seen Les Mis? And he's like, I don't, and he pulls out two tickets and he goes, go see the show tonight. When you come back for the final callback tomorrow, I want you to watch everything he does. And I want you to do exactly that tomorrow. I was like, okay. I go, we see the show, blown away. I also was like, I don't know if I can do that.
Well, because it's like this big part and you have to die and you have to like, you know, get shot and you have to like run over it. It seems daunting.
And it's singing, which is something that I was terrified of at that age. So I was like, all he does is sing. I thought maybe he danced a little bit. And I was like, no, he sings. And I was like, that's all he does is sing. Okay. So I remember seeing it and I was like blown away by the kid. I was like, that's crazy. Because I've never seen a kid do all that on stage before. And I go back the next day. It's down to me and this one other kid, and I'll never forget this because this was my dad was trying so hard to get me away from the door because the kid who was playing, they sang a song. The parents were like listening, being like, "Oh my God, it's going so well." And my dad was like, "Brandon," and I was like, "No, I'm fine." Like I wasn't even nervous.
Yeah,
because also in my head, which is wild to think, I remember being pretty confident because I was like, "I think I know how to do this." I don't know why I had this confidence, but I did. And then the kid out of nowhere starts playing piano apparently. And like, and the kid's like, oh, he's playing the piano. Like they were like, they thought he had this. And it was so strange because I remember those parents being so loud and I was like, there's another kid here, but all right. So then the kid comes out and then the parents are like, so what'd they say? He goes, it's a good job. And you're like, okay. And then they like left. And then I come in and I do what he said. At least I thought I did. He didn't say much. Like I sang, I did Little People and I sang the other thing. And I remember like watching those kids, that kid, and then think, okay, I think he does this, whatever. And I tried to do my best. And he says, thank you. He's like, great job. He's like, thanks. And I was like, okay, thank you. And I go to leave and he stops. He goes, Brandon. I go, yeah. He goes, how would you like to be in Les Mis? And I was like, cool. And then I left. And my dad goes, what happened? He goes, he asked how I like to be in Les Mis. He's like, so you got it. Oh, and I didn't even tell you this part. I was in final callbacks for Carousel too at Lincoln Center at the same time.
Oh shit.
So I had to go from there. I went to the Carousel final callback. That goes well. I end up booking that. But then I also booked Les Mis at the same time. So I obviously like Carousel, the kids don't really do much.
No, they do nothing.
So my agent
and it's
at the time
3 hours long. Oh, well, they're all 3 hours long. Keep going.
Yeah. So it was something like that. And that's how it went. Yeah. Wow. Now I'm remembering this now. So I remember going to Lincoln Center for that. And then my agent was like, don't, we're going to do, cause I got the Les Mis offer already. So, I end up doing that. And
your dad must have been freaking out. Like this kid just keeps booking everything he auditions for.
They were waiting because they were like, also they thought maybe I just wasn't going to be interested in continuing this. Cause obviously it's stressful on them too. Cause they have to take care. I have a brother who's doing a lot of stuff too. Like he's not in the business at all, but you know, he's playing a lot of basketball on this. So like we have to worry about him and then drive me to the show and all. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, I think because they knew how much I loved it, they sacrificed a lot. Like I'm very much appreciative, especially now looking back.
I mean, could you imagine that? Like driving into the city, waiting 3.5 hours for you to finish doing Les Mis to drive you home, and then they have to go to work in the morning. Like every day. Like it's just
it's crazy. And that's why I'm like they know how much I appreciate it, but it's wild to think back, especially now being at this age, being like, damn, I can't imagine like having to do all that right now, but like for a kid. But
what do you remember about that first Les Mis performance? Because that must feel like a lot, learning that show and the turntable and all of that, and being 11 or 12. You were probably 11 at the time.
I was 11. I was 11.
So what do you remember about those first couple shows on?
I don't know. It was kind of wild because I didn't feel the same nerves I did the first time around. I think I was starting to get more confident, I think.
Yeah.
But I do also remember, so my abuelita at the time, my grandmother from, my dad's from Ecuador. So she came to see the show. She spoke a little bit of English, but she, you know, she would come support and she didn't know that there was like a death scene. So she out loud, first gunshot, she went, ay, Dios mío. And my dad had to be like, No, he's not actually getting shot. It's okay. Like she was terrified. She thought I got shot. And that was my that was my first performance.
That is so wild.
Yeah. And that, thank God I didn't hear it. But apparently it was loud enough for people.
Like, lady.
Like, lady, it's fine. It's acting. But yeah, it was wild, man. It was wild. And also the cast, I will say those kids, I mean, to this day, you'll know, like I worked with at the time, the person I replaced in Les Mis was Jason Tam.
Okay.
And then I worked with, it was Lacey Chabert, who was at Savannah Wise, and then Lea Michele came in. I mean, it was like all this crazy young talent.
And who was like starring in the show then?
At the time, when I first came in, our Chabert was Robert Cuccioli, our, Eponine was Sari Ariarty. Our Jean Valjean was
Mark McCracker.
No, David Fisher or something.
Okay.
But a lot of them, the thing with the Valjeans, they just kept coming back. Like they kind of, you know,
yeah.
And we had this guy, I remember the one that I was looking forward to, because at the time he played Valjean the most out of anyone in the history of the show. His name is Craig Shulman. And he came in for a little bit and he was unreal. That's the thing too. Like that was also a time when I knew I wanted to do this. So I would kind of soak up. I would just watch.
Just like a young man in the business, seeing these men like really like carry this show. had to be such an education for, you know, all of the people I've talked to who've been part of Les Mis, that they've learned so much by watching these sort of masters do this huge feat every night. Kind of just, you know, being in the room to watch that happen night after night is a really special experience.
Yeah, it was amazing. And also the cast that I got to work with, the adults, they all were so, so kind to the kids. And like, I really kind of formed a bond with some of them. It's almost like they took us under their wing in a way. It was really, it was great. And like I said, I really did learn a lot just watching and kind of being there.
Now you have a Gavroche story that very few Gavroches have.
I have a couple of stories, and that's one. And I'll tell this one now. So we are the third cover. So what happens is, the way our cast was, we had two Gavroches, and we had three girls who played young Cosette or young Eponine at any moment. So like, if one girl played young Cosette, then the second girl played young Eponine, the third one would cover both. Two of them were out. And I remember I was walking home from school with my mom, and she was like, she gets a phone call. I was supposed to be on as Gavroche that night. I remember it was a Thursday night, and I get a call. Well, she gets the call, and she starts laughing. She's like, wait. She's like, what? She's like, yeah. Because I remember I had one understudy rehearsal. That's all you really need. It's really nothing. You go in, you stick your tongue out, you act like a brat, you leave. So she looks at me, and I was like, what? She's like, you're on for young Eponine. And I remember going, okay, yeah. Because also that never happened. Like, yeah, it never happened. So I was like, oh, that's a funny joke. Like, because also I got close with like the stage management. Like, I would always hang out with them when I wasn't on. And I just like watched the show from there. But I thought they were playing some like joke on me. And I was 11. I don't know. I was like, ah, ha, ha. I get to the theater. I'm signing. I'm like, and it's, you know, Brandon's young Eponine. I was like, oh, this is a great joke. I'm like going up the stairs. I still don't believe it. I'm like, ah, this is great. They have the dress. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to put that on. And then I was like, I don't remember who the two girls were out. I remember being like, wait, where are they? And they're like, no, you're really on. And I was like, what?
So just like in a dress, a big hat, and holding a doll.
And it's huge. It's huge. Huge has this big bonnet, has this big blonde wig. And I'm like pulling up this dress, going up the stairs, like 11-year-old. And everyone's like, how are you doing? I was like, I thought this was a joke. And I gotta say, I had such a blast. Like, I gotta say, and like the girls playing Cosette at the time, like, we were good friends, and she couldn't look at me.
So she
literally looked down pretty much the whole time. She would not look up, and she's supposed to look at young Eponine, and she would not look. And I was like, I get it, but come on. But I'm not gonna lie, once I knew, I was in it to win it. I was like, I'm going in right now. I had a blast. But also, I got out early. You get out early when you play. So I was like, then I get to go home.
I'm going home.
I'm like, done. I did my 5 seconds. I'm out. So that was my young Eponine story. And that was just like, I have a Polaroid of that somewhere. I'll send it to you.
Please find it for
I'll
me.
I'll send it.
We'll put it on the Instagram, friends.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Unless you don't want it on the Instagram.
I think I put it on voluntarily, I think, at one point. I'll send it to you though.
What a crazy fun experience to have. I mean, I'm sure
it was, oh my God, it was wild. It was wild. I had like one more that was I missed a cue, and I've never been more scared in my life, but my mic was on. I went up like it's when I say that when I go to tell the schoolboys, I tell them that General Lamarck is dead. So it's kind of a pivotal moment in the show.
Yes.
I was nowhere to be found because I went to my dressing room to play cards. I thought I had all the time in the world. And then I hear this music start, and I go, oh, and I'm 4 or 5 flights up before I even get to. And I start screaming, I missed my cue. My mic was on. All you hear is, I missed my cue.
No.
And then it's like the guy, I can't remember which character it was. It's almost like he had like a sixth sense. He was like, wait. General Lamarck is dead.
Like,
he didn't do it like that.
It came to him in a fever dream.
Like, yeah, he almost had that moment because it came out of nowhere. But you had to do it because I wasn't going to be there.
I mean, can you imagine the things that we're asking 11-year-olds to do on Broadway? I mean, it really is wacky as hell.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
But how cool to be part of Les Mis and that the history of that show, and it's such a pivotal thing.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
We have to talk about Big because Big was a bit, I know. So here we go.
No, let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. So how long between Les Mis did Big come up? Was there a big gap, short gap?
It was a short gap. So I finished in the summer of 95, like around July is when I had my last show in Les Mis. And then I started auditions for Big, I think, right in like September. Something like that. Cut to actually like a few years prior, I did like a workshop with Susan Stroman. It's me and a couple of the guys did like a little workshop trying to workshop choreography for Big. So I knew it was coming at some point. And I started that right away. Well, auditions, and I ended up booking it, I think at some point in like October, and we started rehearsals in December. So it was pretty quick. It was a pretty quick turnaround. And that was my first original cast that I was part of. So I didn't know. That was quite an experience for all of us as kids, because that also was like, at the time, we didn't know Rent, Pretty and Noise were going to come.
Here we go.
At the time, it was deemed like the most hyped show to come on Broadway for that season. So there was a lot of pressure. And at the time, it was like the creative dream team. It was like Paul Gimignani, it was Susan Stroman, Mike Ockrent, Maltby and Shire, John Weidman. It was that whole...
It felt like it could not lose.
That's the thing. And at the time, and, you know, when we go in, it's also, we're kids. So it's like, Raphael Schwartz is kind of like, we're having parties there and stuff like that. It just felt like a dream as a kid. But we didn't really understand the pressure that we were going to be under until we got in the room. And granted, they were great with us. But
And also, there's so many of you. I mean, I think the big difference here between your other two Broadway shows where there was four or five kids, you were like 16 kids, right? Or something.
Yeah, there was a lot. I think, there was a lot, for sure. And we were being asked to do a lot. It was the most I was ever asked to do, especially at that time.
You mean as far as like involvement in the actual show?
Like
the whole thing. Yeah.
It was, I mean, we were dancing a lot. Like, it was a lot. It was definitely not something that I was used to. And also like the 10 to 6 rehearsals. And then, you know, that was the first time I was ever did tutoring, because we had no choice. Our rehearsal schedule was so crazy. So that level of exhaustion I wasn't accustomed to. And also not fully understanding the pressure that comes with opening a new show, especially when you have a creative team as, you know, hyped as they are, or they were at the time. And I just remember that rehearsal process being, we had a great time, but when we got to Detroit, because our out-of-town tryout, most, at least back in the day,
there's usually go somewhere to work it out. Before you
work, you tweak, you make tweaks for like 3 months, and then you come back, you rehearse some more, and then you open. So we were in Detroit, and that was probably one of the wildest experiences I've had, especially as a kid. But even as an adult, if that was happening, I'd be like, this is insane.
What made it so crazy? I mean, you've workshopped new shows. You've done this now as an adult. What made that Big experience so insane?
So there was constant changes, not just like small minor, like, oh, we're going to cut a verse here. Kind of full numbers were being changed during the day. We were learning brand new choreography, brand new song during the day, then having to learn as kids. We do tutoring and then we go and do the original stuff. And
the old version at night while you're rehearsing a new version during the day.
And it got to me so bad that I would make myself sick. Like I've never felt that way. Like I had to call out of shows because I would get myself sick because I would get so nervous. I didn't know what it got to me, and it never happened like that before for me. Yeah. I never felt that kind of pressure. And it was apparent because of how intense the rehearsals were like during the day, because the reviews came out and we got pinned. And I think obviously we were changing numbers before that, but, once that reason, it just, you could feel the weight of it all. And I was like, I don't know what's happening, but like, okay.
Do you think the other kids could feel it as well? Or are you like super in tune to that kind of thing?
I don't know. I think so. I think we all kind of were on the same page with things. I just think some kids handle it better than others. And for some reason, for me, I made myself sick. Like it was so weird. And that's never happened to me before, but so that sounds like it was just terrible. And it really wasn't. Overall, it was a great experience. And like, it's always incredible to like be part of something new. And, I definitely don't take that for granted. But yeah, it was just like, it was just a different experience. It just was different. It's a new, like I said, new show, crazy creative team. And there's a lot of hype behind it.
And so when you came into New York, obviously the show was still changing during that preview period. Was there a moment where you're like, no, this is really good. Like this is going to hit hard. Or did you never feel that?
I didn't know. That's the thing. I knew based on how I was feeling. I personally was having a blast. Like I was I loved doing the show. I knew if anything, kids would love it. That's kind of where I was at. Cause that's the thing, as kids, we were like, well, we like it. So kids are going to love it.
This is great.
Right?
That's just, we're having
that's
the best
kind
time.
Of what we thought. But like, honestly, when we got back to New York, a lot of the changes that were made, the new song, I mean, there's a list, there's a book that was written about it.
And making it big.
At the end of it. Yes. And yes. At the end, you could see all the cuts. It was wild how many songs that we went through. But when we got to New York, like it felt all the changes that were made and all the new songs and all that. It felt like it worked. At least better than it did in Detroit. And so we really thought, I mean, we all kind of were on the same. I was like, this is going to be a hit. Like, I think we're going to be good. And also we were selling well. So it was like, okay, I think we're fine. Little did we know that a show called Rent was coming.
Was nipping at your heels. Now you're, so that show Big was not nominated for Best Musical that year, which was kind of, I'm sure, shocking to everyone. And I'm wondering what it was like for you all in the theater and especially you kids, sort of what that day happened and you were not nominated for Best Musical. I mean, it had to feel like we're in trouble.
It was devastating. It was devastating. Especially to see the shows that were nominated hadn't been open in months.
Yeah. It was like Swinging on a Star, Bringing the Noise. Yeah. Rent.
Yeah.
And what, there was another show that I like, feel like I've never heard of.
It just felt like,
oh, Grand Night for Singing. That was it. I think
that's what it was. Yeah. Okay. Something like that. And then Daniel Jenkins didn't get nominated either.
Crazy.
And he was fantastic. And he was, my God. Just
the nicest,
so kind.
First of all, the nicest man in show business.
The nicest man. He went out of his way to hang out with us. Also, he was like, it was kind of like character research for him. He wanted to see how like kids interacted, but he was just so kind. Like you said, he was such a good leader. And so it was just devastating. And I think the writing was on the wall once that happened. We kind of knew, at least that was the vibe around the theater. And he made an announcement, actually. I remember Daniel Jenkins went on the intercom the day when we all found out like what the nominations were and everyone was down. And he was like, I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was like just along the lines of like, you know, I love you all. Like I'm proud of the show, stuff like that, which was helpful to hear, but you could hear it in his voice. He was just heartbroken. But like I said, I think after that, we kind of knew, and you know, overall it was
the
a great experience.
Now you understudied Billy. Did you ever get to go on and play that part?
I did not, no. But I got to have a couple understudy rehearsals, and that was enough for me.
Well, it's like this huge role. What a stressful thing to like know that you have to be ready to do it. I'm sure is a lot for a kid.
I think also, I also knew because actually a buddy of mine, Graham Bowen, he does Book of Mormon, but so we did Big together, and he was the first cover for Josh and Billy. And then later on, we did Gypsy together. We kind of grew up in this business, you know, and he's the best. But I kind of knew that I would never go on anyway, so I was never really nervous about it. I was like, oh, this is...
You're like, okay. I just need to know these lines for understudy rehearsal.
That's kind of what it felt like. I would literally like look at it and I was like, all right, I'll do this now.
So after big chapter, which is a huge thing to go out of town and workshop a show, originate a new show, make a cast record, like that whole thing, you have this very busy experience, you know, creating a new musical on Broadway, and then that closes. Is any of your thought like, I need a big break from this, or I just go to the next thing? Tell me what you were thinking after Big closed.
Yeah, so when I remember the tail end of it, I was back, I was entering my freshman year of high school, and I remember just kind of trying to do homework, and I would like fall asleep as I was going. I was like, I don't think I can maintain this. And then at just the timing where they were like, we're closing in 2 weeks, I was like, thank God, because I was not doing well. So that I took that as a sign. I was like, maybe I need to take a break. So I kind of did. I wasn't doing much. I was started doing readings of a show called Cabin's Courageous, like
which I auditioned for and did not get. So congratulations.
Oh man.
Because you got it. All right, go ahead.
No, but I was doing readings of that even during Big. I think I did one or two, something like that.
And that was starring Treat Williams at MTC, right?
That's when it started Treat. So at the time it was just readings here and there. And so I had all of my freshman year. Well, yeah, that's kind of what it was. It was just doing little readings here and there. And then in 97, I think, Manhattan Theater Club opted to do the first like workshop. And I did Harvey Chain, and I got to do it opposite Mandy Patinkin, played Manuel. And that was unreal. Like, really? He's Mandy Patinkin, and to see it up close. But the thing is, he looked at me not as a kid, as a peer. Like he would interrupt me. I would try and do homework. He's like, Brandon, come over here. He's like, let's run these lines real quick. It's like, I'm doing homework. But he just, you know, he was so serious about the work, and he was really passionate about the show. And it was just, that was a masterclass in itself, like doing scenes with him. I was like, and being that young, I was like, this is wild. But he was just also another guy, just a remarkable, fantastic leader. Like he really, he made that show just, oh my God.
So, but he did not do it when you guys did a full production of it.
No, he didn't go forward with it. And I still don't know necessarily why. I don't know what happened.
We'll call him and ask him after this.
Yeah, right. Well, he's also, he's Mandy Patinkin. I'm sure he had 8 million things to do. But that didn't work out. But it took like a year and a half maybe for us to actually go for it to be a full production. And then Treat Williams came in. So overall, being on stage, it was about a year or two before I got back on.
And were you auditioning for other things like commercials and TV things like in between while you were at school, high school?
I did like one like small like indie film in between that, but that was about it. For the most part, it was like focused on my studies and and then it was mostly waiting on that show because I think my parents, like I said, they're very much, they wanted to make sure that I got a good education. They want to make sure that I my focus was on that before anything. So they were kind of like, all right, if this Kevin Courageous thing's coming around, because I was attached to it for so long, you could do that. Unless it's something that you have to do, you know.
What were your thoughts about college? Were you like, I should go study musical theater? I should go study something else? Where were you in your head about sort of making that decision about that next 4 years after high school?
Yeah, I wanted to. So when Captain Courageous was done, I took the next few years off to focus on, you know, education and to get into college, because I did want to go. And I know some people are like, why would you do that when you've been doing it your whole life? I didn't have proper training in regards to acting. And I wanted to get that. And especially since I was doing musical theater, I was like, I can also learn a lot just from getting more training in that, in acting, and also in voice. So I was like, why not give that a try? And also I felt like I needed to grow as a person more. And I was like, college would probably help in some capacity, because I felt very sheltered in some way, just because I had not sheltered, like disciplined. Like I had to, because I was in this business so long, I didn't get to do things that most kids get to do. So it was like, I need to kind of, A, be able to focus on that, but also like live my life a little bit. So yeah, that was kind of what my thought process was. And I ended up going to NYU. I went to, at the time, Cap 21 was affiliated with NYU. So yes. I went to that program. And I think my first year, admittedly, was kind of a throwaway. I went wild. I went wild.
You're like, I'm out of jail.
I'm at it. Yeah, kind of. That's what it felt like. And yeah. I was living in the city, and I was like, I'm just going nuts. But I was able, you know, I buckled down and I did learn a lot. I'm really glad I went. Truly. I had some wonderful acting teachers. And
is it a different experience to go to a program like that when you have had more experience than even some of your teachers? Like you have had, that's a very strange thing to me.
It is. And I will say too, I would refrain from telling people I did stuff there, kids, because I felt like there'd be pressure to be. And I was like, I'm there to learn like everyone else. And like, I'm going to fail a lot in this space, and that's okay. But I didn't like people knowing what my resume was prior to, because I felt this pressure to be good. And I was like, I'm going to fail. I'm going to be bad. Like, I'm here to learn. And I remember when some student found out like some of the shows I did, and I was horrified, because I was like, I felt that, oh, really? Well, then clearly you're going to be great. It felt like that kind of energy, and I didn't want that at all. I wanted to feel like I was in like a safe space to do things and not feel people be like, well, if he could do that, you know? So that, I think also that's also partly why my first year felt very, didn't go as well as I wanted to, because I think I just put this unnecessary pressure on myself.
Trying to figure it out. So in 2003, which is 6 years after Big, you returned to Broadway back at the exact same theater at the Schubert to do Gypsy with Bernadette Peters, directed by Sam Mendes, which was a production I thought was spectacular. I always ask this question because it feels like very pivotal to me that as someone who was a kid returning to Broadway as an adult now must feel very special, because it's like, this wasn't just a fluke thing that I was a cute kid. It's like, I really have the ability. Tell me about if you felt that at all, or what it felt like to be back on Broadway as an adult.
Yeah. And I'm going to touch on Gypsy in 1 second, but that's exactly kind of what it was for me too in college. It was like the transition into adulthood in this business. It's scary, and not a lot of people do it or feel like they can or can do it. So there was definitely fear there. And there's a lot of doubt every now and then. Like I'd have moments in college, like where we do whatever production ever, and I was like, okay, I can do this. But then, you know, the same breath, it was like, I do something and be like, well, maybe I can't. The most surreal part about it was getting to work, aside from being in the Schubert, whatever, there was like Jerry Mitchell. He knew me when I was a kid, like, and for me to be transitioning to adulthood and like working with him again, it was surreal. I was like, oh wow, okay, I think I can do this. And he kind of was definitely helpful and gave me confidence I needed, I think, because I you know, you never really know, because I know so many kids obviously doing this for so long that was it. Like once they grew up, they couldn't, and some of them wanted to, it just didn't happen for them. And I just felt very, very lucky. And then obviously being in the Schubert was just, that was wild.
So now you're an adult and there's a bunch of kids in the show. Do you react differently because you know exactly what their story is, or, you know, like how, what is that like?
Yeah. That dynamic? It's funny. I end up like being like really cool with like the kids, because I understood what they were going through. Yeah. I think. It was just I really and another thing that was crazy about those kids too is that their dressing rooms were exactly the exact dressing rooms that I had when I was so big. So I remember going up and I was like, oh my God, this is wild. Watching them was definitely surreal. To like watch them perform, I was like, this is crazy. Like that was the first time I really processed like, oh, I'm an adult now. Yeah. That's where I'm at. I'm not these cute little kids.
You don't have a Wrangler. You can do whatever you want.
No, nothing. But
Tell us about working with Bernadette Peters on that show, because I'm sure that has to be a masterclass, because she's different every night, but totally honest. And I thought that performance was really astounding. And I know not everyone felt that, but I did. And so that's all that matters. Tell me what it was like to be in the room to watch that happen.
The thing that I really appreciate about her, aside from her being Bernadette Peters, is she goes out of her way to get to know you and will remember things. Like I remember I had a conversation almost in passing. We were sitting like, I can't remember. It was the scene where all of his farm boys were giving gifts to
Louise.
Oh my God. Louise, thank you so much. Wow. It's been a minute. Anyway. And so we're taking a minute and I don't know what was happening, but she looked over to me and she's like, where are you from, Brandon? And I told her, I was like, Ozone Park. And she's like, I'm from Ozone Park. And yeah. Granted, that was fine. And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. And yeah, it was quick. And then that was it. A few months went by, whatever, we opened the show and she gave us hard cover copies of Gypsy of the script. And then she wrote something for all of us in it. And she wrote something along the lines of like, it's good to see someone from my old town do good. Something like that.
Yeah.
And, it's just something I was like, that was such a quick thing. She easily could have forgotten. She had 8 million things on her mind. She's leading this show. But she would remember people's names. How's your family? How's your mom? Like, she remembered everyone. And she would go out of her way to do that. She just was so kind. And I don't know many people like that. Yeah. Especially her caliber. She was just tremendous. Tremendous. And that cast, to this day, we still have a text thread. Like, we are like family.
I was just going to say, like, everyone who's been in that show only has incredible things to say about what was happening backstage. And, you know, obviously Brooks and our friend Tim Federle. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Heather TP, like all these great people, kids, yeah. Adults. Like, it just seemed like a really spectacular group of people. So it's nice to know that it truly was what was happening.
100%. And for me, it was like, I was still, you know, I was 20, so I was still young. I was like the little brother for like that group of the farm boys and stuff. So I hate to say, but it is like I did grow a lot and I learned a lot. And I felt like that was the perfect show for me to be a part of at that time in my life.
The transition from childhood to adulthood is like, that was a perfect bridge. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And it's also, so there's that sequence where we're doing the transition as mm-hmm. from the kids and we grow up and we do the trenches. And I remember being like, oh, this really feels like what's happening to me. Like I'm growing. And that's just what it is. I remember every time I do it, this is so crazy to see. And what's funny is little me, played by Eamon Foley, who's now like,
who will be on this podcast next week. Go ahead.
Oh my God. I can't stand next to him. I'm like, how are you this ripped? What's happening right now? Like just this. Oh my God. But he's such a kind.
He's very funny. He's a very funny guy.
I dig him. He's great. He's great.
All right. So in recent years, you've obviously been back on Broadway in Tuck Everlasting and you went into SpongeBob and you're, you know, with our friend Vastu, who we all love so much. She's the greatest human on earth. You sort of were so funny as Patchy in SpongeBob and I was very lucky to get to see you do that. But you're also like this, and you're doing these musicals on Broadway, but you're also this incredible actor. And a couple of years ago, you had this incredible opportunity to do View from the Bridge at the Goodman that Evo directed. Yeah. It was like the Broadway essentially transfer after Broadway. And I'm sure that was a transformative experience for you to do the best play ever written with this incredible director and not be in a musical. I'm sure that experience is like cemented that this is what you should be doing.
Yeah, I yeah, it was also in a minute. There was like a short period of time, it was like 24, 25, where I was I got to do some plays. Like I did a play at King Company, then I did play at Atlantic Theater Company, and then Playwrights Film, and I was kind of doing that, and I really gravitated towards acting more. I was starting to feel like I wanted to do more of that. And then this opportunity came along. And I remember seeing the play in 2015 and I was just astounded. It was one of the best productions of that play I've seen. And yeah, I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with that production. And yeah, so then it came around like a year or two later. And I, yeah, and I went to Goodman and did that production, which was surreal in itself to be kind of stepping.
Did you lobby for that? Did you were like, I have to play that part and make sure everyone knew it?
Yeah, well, what's funny is I remember when I saw it, I remember in my head saying, I would love to play. I remember saying that role or a role like that someday. Mm-hmm. And I never thought it would happen. And then when that audition came along, I was pushing for it. And thankfully that casting director knew me enough to let me come in. And I had to audition for the Evo's associate, but also be on tape so Evo can see it. And I had two auditions and that was it. And then I found out like a few days later, and a month or so after that, I was in Chicago. And it was one of the best experiences I've ever had as an actor. It's just, I mean, I don't know how you top getting to work with Evo.
It's really tricky. So obviously you're doing a lot of film and TV stuff, and that's somewhat of the focus now. What do you want to be doing in this sort of, I know the earth's on fire, but when the fire cools out a little bit, what would you like to be doing in this sort of next chapter of your career?
I mean, I would definitely love to do more TV film. Like I've been fortunate with that. Like I'm currently doing a recurring role on a show called Raising Kanan that's on Starz Network. And exciting. So that's been nice. Yeah. So I definitely would love to transition more into that, for sure. But theater wise, I mean, gosh, I don't have anything necessarily in mind, but yeah, I mean, of course I'd love to do more plays if that comes along, but yeah, I don't really have anything that I can think of right now.
When are you playing Alexander Hamilton? When's it happening? I'm sending it out. I just think you'd be so good.
I appreciate that. I had a buddy, John Rua, he was like, I think you'd be good. And I was like, I think you're crazy, but you know, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Listen, if I'm saying it here, it's into the mic. Hey, now it's in the universe. In a couple of weeks when you text me and you're like, this is crazy. And also we'll see you in the Better Nate Than Ever movie, which of course loved working on with you, which we'll talk more about on this podcast, but, it's such a great little movie and you'll be, I can't wait for you to pop up and everyone to see you. And
that's another thing. Tim Federle, my gosh, like
what a star.
Just the best person. I'm so thrilled for him.
But like you've now done so many, you obviously were a castmate with him. Then he wrote Tuck Everlasting that you were in. And then of course he directed and wrote Better Nate. And so it's nice to be nice to the people you meet, because I guarantee you, he wouldn't have cast you in all of his things if you were not a nice person.
He's the best. And that was another thing that was crazy too, that one day, cause I very, very, very little do that movie, but I'm happy to have been a part of it. But when we were shooting that, it was right at the Schubert Theater where we did Gypsy. And I remember seeing him, just looking at him, like running this whole production. I was like, this is crazy, crazy. But also he's always so talented.
He's a genius. So there we go. There we have it.
Genius.
Yeah. Brandon, we have to do quick fire questions. All right. Are you ready?
A couple of
things you've done already. First audition song. Getting to know you. First Broadway show you ever saw was the first Broadway show you were ever in. Will Rogers Follies. Okay. What is your favorite tattoo?
Oh, gosh. I have one. It's my family crest on my chest.
Do you have a terrible survival job that you ever had?
Yeah, I had to do... I bartended some event. I don't even know, some rich family in their apartment. It was just the worst. It was a nightmare.
That sounds like the worst. What is your go-to album for a car trip?
Oh, go-to album for a car trip. Oh, gosh. I don't know. Anything, you know what? I'll say anything Led Zeppelin is good for me.
Great. Can you name two Real Housewives?
There's Real Housewives.
Okay. You cannot.
I can't. I don't know. I don't.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, how good are you at playing the drums?
I want to say I'm like a solid 6.
All right. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, Animal, of course.
Are you into true crime? And if so, what crime would you like to have solved?
Oh, gosh, I am into true crime. What would I want to have solved? I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But yes, I am into true crime.
JonBenet Ramsey. It's JonBenet Ramsey. You have to
know. Oh, but didn't they already do something? Like
nobody really knows. It's probably the brother, but I shouldn't say that. I'm going to get sued.
I think the brother. Okay.
I don't know. And then I think, no, I have lots of thoughts. Have you ever left a show at intermission and you don't have to tell us what it was?
Yes, I have.
Okay. What was the last Broadway show you saw?
Last Broadway show I saw was, Clyde.
Oh, incredible. It was so fun, right? What movie can you watch over and over again?
Oh, gosh. There's so many. You know what, actually? Holidays, and I can watch Christmas Vacation. I watch all the time.
I mean, over and over again. Yeah. So good. All right. What advice do you have for young performers?
Oh, gosh. This is always tricky. I would say if this is something you're interested in, and I'm sure a lot of people say the same thing, make sure you take classes and in everything. Like, honestly, if this is something you truly want to do, like voice lessons, dance lessons, and also don't take things that you're just comfortable doing. Make sure you're taking classes that make you uncomfortable, because that's the only way you're going to grow.
I made that mistake as a kid.
Yeah.
That's great advice. Please take your classes at Broadway Workshop, BroadwayWorkshop.com. All right. Tell the people where they can follow you to see what Brandon's up to.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm only on one thing. I'm on Instagram, and it's at Brandon Xavier. Oh, sorry. Brandon X Espinoza. That's my handle.
I had to look it up.
No, I forgot.
Well, everyone follow you. You're so great. I love watching you play the drums and do great things on the Instagram.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I think you're so talented. Thank you so much for spending this time with me today and us. And I only want great things for you. And I can't wait to see you back on Broadway again in like a great new play. And of course on my TV screen. So thank you for being with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I had a blast.
Always. Thank you, Little Me listeners. We'll be back next week with an all new episode. Bye for now. Thank you, listeners. This podcast is produced by Alan Seals, Dori Berenstein, and the Broadway Podcast Network, and edited by Derek Gunther. For more information on the Little Me podcast, go to bpn.fm/littleme. And follow me on Instagram at Mark Tuminelli or on Twitter at That Tuminelli. And for more information on workshops, classes, and everything Broadway Workshop, go to BroadwayWorkshop.com. Thank you for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.